हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 48. Sutta 33. Phala bhakter nanyad angam ekatvat svata siddhatvach cha. The ultimate bhakti is devoid of any other limbs because it's of its exclusively unalloyed and absolute character. Right? Ultimate bhakti, as we saw, as Vishwanath explaining, meaning that on prema. Right, when you come to those levels of the Vipralamba and the Sambho, right, then it comes to that ultimate level. Right? In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 12246 and 12248-249, Srila Rupa Goswami explains. Some scholars argue that simply by following the principles of Varna and Ashram, one can gradually rise to the perfections reached by practicing devotional service. But this argument is not accepted by great authorities. Right? Because the point is that Varnashram then regulates the life, it brings it in line with the laws of God. So I think there is a quote in the Puranas where it is mentioned if you follow Varnashram perfectly for 100 consecutive lifetimes, then one can be elevated to Vaikuntha, right? But here we're talking about when we say devotional service, we mean that which is free from the desire for liberation, right? So even in Vaikuntha, there's the desires for four forms of accepted Vaishnav liberation, like that. So when we're saying beyond that, that's Varnashram's not going to get there. They function on rules, following God's laws. And so it's not technically inappropriate that such a thing is possible, because to be able to follow perfectly for 100 lifetimes, that's pretty serious. It would be much easier to follow one time with devotional service, right? Like that. So it's not technically correct like that. Some scholars recommend that knowledge and renunciation are important factors for elevating oneself to devotional service. But actually that is not a fact. Actually, the cultivation of knowledge or renunciation, which are favorable for achieving a footing in Krishna consciousness, may be accepted in the beginning, but ultimately they may also come to be rejected. For devotional service is dependent on nothing other than the sentiment or desire for such service. It requires nothing more than sincerity. You know, so that's the fact. So the point is, we say, oh, then why do we have to follow all this? The point is that if you didn't follow that, then what would you do? How would you connect everything to Krishna? So if you're going to connect everything to Krishna, if you're going to connect your cooking to Krishna, how are you going to do that? Right? Technically, what would you do? You don't have to follow any rule. You can do whatever you like. But you have to connect it to Krishna. So what would you have to do to actually connect it to Krishna? You don't have to. It means you're not obliged to follow any rules. So therefore, what would you do? Feed him with a spoon? Okay, but what would you feed him?
You want to cook something that Krishna likes.
You have to cook something Krishna likes, right?
And therefore you would follow.
Yeah, you have to cook something you like, so it has to be up to the standards of cleanliness, consciousness, you know, the items used, you know, and even techniques of cooking. So you'd end up back there anyway. So the point is it's so much easier just to start in the beginning by following the rules and regulations that the acharyas recommend. Remember, Rupa Goswami himself is saying this. but he's already recommended sadhana bhakti. His point is that devotional service, the reason that it moves forward is because of your desire. It's not because you have more knowledge or more renunciation that you advance. It's because you have the desire. So if you focus just on knowledge and just on renunciation, then you become more materially detached, but it doesn't mean more devotional. Devotional means you have to have the desire for it, just like you have the desire for knowledge and jnana and knowledge and renunciation. That's why you're getting it. So devotional service happens because you desire it. That's all that's required. But, as he says, then cultivation of knowledge or renunciation, which are favorable for achieving a footing in Krishna consciousness. That's useful. But once that footing is there, the reason that it progresses is because of the desire. That doesn't mean that one has to give up those activities. And if they're favorable for the Krishna consciousness to proceed, why one wouldn't use them? Right? What the Acharya is trying to point out is that devotional service stands on its own. It doesn't actually have any angas. You know, the pure unalloyed doesn't have any angas. It's only the desire to please Krishna. That's all it is. There isn't anything else. All these are manifestations of desiring to please Krishna. Right? That's the point. But there isn't the. But in sadhana bhakti, you have so many angas. But that's not the ultimate bhakti. It's in pursuance, so therefore it's considered as good as. But it's still sadhana. So you're practicing rules, you're studying, you're doing the different things that will give you the understanding. Because why do you need to study?
To comprehend the path.
Okay, but why do you have to comprehend the path?
Otherwise you don't know where you are, where's the goal.
Okay, but why don't we know where the path is or goal?
Because we are under illusion.
And why are we under illusion?
Because we wanted to.
Right. So that's the point. When you want to not be under illusion, then that's when one gets out of illusion. When one wants to be in devotional service, then that's what one will move towards. Right? So it's due to ignorance that one has chosen this path instead of one's natural path. So knowledge will remove the ignorance, right? So that means knowledge, just to, you know, give a general idea so that there's no confusion, as like a general benchmark. Knowledge and renunciation are very useful up to the stage of bhava. From bhava, you don't have to worry about them. Okay, so just so we don't get confused before that. Like that, you know. Okay, that's because Vishwanath then makes the point that knowledge, because the knowledge is burning up the material identity, the material existence. But when one gives up the conditioned nature and takes up the constitutional, right, the spiritual form, at the point of bhava, then there is no material nature to burn up with the knowledge, with the fire of knowledge. So therefore, the fuel is gone. So that means there's no need of the fire. Right? The fuel, the fire burns up the fuel, and in this way, it itself is also. Does that make sense?
The only other use for that fire before preaching, right?
Yes, but then you're acting as a madhyama. But the point is the uttama doesn't require knowledge to perform devotional service. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because otherwise what's happening is you're performing the devotional activity, but it's not powered by knowledge, right? Because we're attracted to the material energy. It's knowledge that defines that we shouldn't be. Does that make sense? It's knowledge that's doing that, right? It's knowledge that's pointing out Krishna's God and we're not. We're his servant. It's knowledge that's pointing out the material world isn't has no substance for the living entity. The spiritual world does. It's knowledge that points out, therefore the process of devotional service will elevate you. Right? It's knowledge that shows the ultimate goal is prema. Otherwise, due to ignorance, we don't know any of that. That's why knowledge is useful. And renunciation is useful because we're attached to the material world. We give up the material world, then you can accept the spiritual world. You can accept service to Krishna. But as long as we're attached to the mundane, how are we going to be attached to Krishna? You understand? So its usefulness is simply getting out of the improper situation. But once you've come to the neutral state, right, where the soul is situated on the transcendental platform, then it's only the desire that will take it from there onto prema. And in prema, continuous cultivation, right? But it's knowledge, renunciation, and that desire for devotional service that got one to that neutral state. Does that make sense? Right? That got you to the spiritual platform. But then it's left.
In this point, that because knowledge renunciation has been cultivated for a long time, up to the point of Baba, the process of unattachment to knowledge, it's not important, it's natural, right?
It's natural because there's a taste. Because when there's taste and attachment, means Rupa Goswami is defining that attachment means when, see, is sambandha jnana is knowledge. Right? Then you have abhideya and then prayojana, right? Now, so intellectually you have to cross from sambandha to prayojana before you start abhideya, right? So that element of why you're doing something is there. But once that's been crossed and there's attachment, it's not the knowledge that's fueling your endeavor. You're using knowledge to make sure the endeavor goes nicely. But it's not the reason why you're doing it. It's attachment. So the point is, attachment means it's not being driven by knowledge. Right? Just automatically it means that. Does that make sense? That's why someone is going through this very nice analytical thing, but as soon as they come to the conclusion, get attached to it, they don't use their intelligence anymore. Does that make sense? So that's why there needs to be training that you continue to use intelligence when you're applying the activity. Because otherwise the tendency is to drop it. And because there's feelings, everyone will say it's fine. If you are performing an activity with full feeling, right, technically in the modern concept, it can't be blamed. You know, it may be okay, it's maybe not working out just right, but, you know, it's sincere. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing. It's like the guy walks into his house, you know, and then, you know, hears some sound upstairs, walks upstairs, you know, opens the bedroom door, and there's his wife with some other guy in bed, right? So he kills the guy, right? Like that. And so we're leaving it at that, okay? So then it'll come up in court, you know, it's first degree murder. But if he can prove that it was emotion, a crime of passion, it's murder, but it becomes reduced. You know, it might even be less than manslaughter. You know, because it's, you know, no one else in the court would appreciate it either. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is, if that emotion is there, then that's good enough. You know, he tried, you know, he got up, he said something and all that. Maybe it was what he said was stupid or useless, but everyone lauds the attempt. You understand? So that concept is there. But on the material platform, it doesn't necessarily get done what you want. You know? It may help, but it may not. But that's the difference, you know? Like that. You'll also see. Does that make sense? So, but that may be also inspired by lack of authority and lack of rules and all that. You know, so that's why the American guy, you know, doesn't know anything. He's just a private there and couldn't figure out which end of the gun to work. But then they get attacked and everybody gets killed. And then he somehow or another figures out and wipes out, you know, whatever it is that's bothering them. And, you know, standard, right? Like that. The Europeans, it's more, you know, they went to a good school, high marks, you know, educated, cultured, you know, practical in the world, then goes into the military, and then using that skills and intelligence, then he comes out successful. Right? That's why he has a future after the battle, while the other one doesn't, right? You know, so. Does that make some sense? So there's this element that as you move away from the concept, the importance of rules, the more just the emotion is the driving force. But it's in the perverted state. Right? So all we're doing is that exercise was so that we can accept that there is a concept within material society that activity fueled by emotion has a certain qualification that in the field of relationships that would be better than someone who's working on knowledge. Right? Does that make sense? So that's because its origin is because bhakti is not fueled or anything by anything other than the desire to please Krishna. That's all. These other things are there. It makes it its technique to get one to that point where one can exclusively work on that. Does that make sense?
This element of the feeling, of the full extent of feeling, is that because of the deep attachment to the feelings that if something's happening in that field, it must be true, it must have something.
Are you talking about the material or spiritual?
Material.
Basically, because you're doing something because it gives you a fuller experience. So emotions generate fuller experiences. So therefore, then you feel that it must be right because you're working. It's just like the guy works all day at work, and when he comes home, what's he looking for? Yeah, an experience. He comes home and there's a nice exchange with the family. It makes everything worthwhile. You know? Does that make sense? That's the whole point. So that recognition of it. But the point is not everybody recognizes. So then one is not inspired. But as we saw from the Shikshastika, right, that element of that the ultimate some aspect of that sambho bhakti, right, then generates that the person doesn't have to reciprocate. You're going to want to you love them so much, you want to please them whether they reciprocate or not. Does that make sense? Done. So, therefore, it's not necessary on the material platform because we are the center. You know, the point is the spiritual world on the platform of prema, one is trying to please the center. Right? And in the material world, the same. The difference is who's the center. You know? You understand? So what happens is we can say, no, I'm extending, I, others are more important. No, all it is you include them in your center. Right? So your family is the center. But you are the center of the center, you know. You know, just like the soul of souls, right? You know, the super soul is even in the soul. You know, so he's the smaller than the smallest, because we're the smallest. You don't get smaller than us. So that would appear even atoms are bigger than us. Right? You know, and they haven't come to atoms yet, right? Because atom means indivisible. So they're able to divide these atoms. So an atom smaller than that. So the soul is smaller than that. And then the Lord enters the soul. So he's the smallest of the smaller, you know, the smallest of the smallest. Right?
Alright, so now on the spiritual, sometimes in the name of practice, being practical, we drop
yes.
many things which are science.
Right.
Is that motivated by this phenomenon?
It depends. If the mood is there and it goes nicely, then it can be. But the point is it sustainable? You know what I'm saying? If it's, let's say, in a kirtan, then one went along and one did something crazy in the kirtan, but it fit the mood because everyone was excited, right? Then, because it was such a great kirtan, then there's always that, you know, brahmachari that then at the next kirtan, he does the same tricks, right? But is it the same? No, because for him, now it's a rule. Oh, if you do this, you get this response. Well, the other one, they weren't looking for, they were so ecstatic and this would add, they just did it. But it's not the ritual. It just enhances the environment. It creates an environment. It enhances the environment of the devotional sentiment, like that. But it's devotional that you're doing it. But the other one you're doing because it's a rule, and you think the rule will generate the feeling, but it doesn't. So that's why you know a big kirtan, and then if that kirtanier comes and does it again, then it's again ecstatic, you know. So then the brahmacharis pick up on it, and then they start to do it. And then you know, nobody's impressed. And then the big kirtan guys also never use it anymore. Right, you know. Does that make sense? So it's like, so it becomes a fashion. That's why fashion goes out of fashion. Because aesthetics don't go out of fashion. You know what I'm saying? It lasts, but something that is specific because of a particular, you know, mood, then that doesn't. You know, it's like you say the Roman or Greek architecture. You can use it now and it looks good. You know, you wanted everything to be, you know, stately or majestic, you use that. It works, still thousands of years later. But, you know, you wouldn't be able to use elements of architecture, let's say, from the 60s. You know? It looks stupid then, it looks stupid now, right? You know, so it's just, you know. No, then they didn't think, but it's not, it's, it, well, now it looks stupid. But my point is the Greek still doesn't look stupid. Did they, some people really liked it, but probably a lot of people thought it looked stupid. So in other words, the more intellectual, artsy, or those kind of, they thought it was cool. And the common person, for lack of any taste, may have gone along with it, but there was a lot of people who didn't like it. But it'll be hard to find someone who doesn't say that the Greek or Roman architecture looks good. They may not prefer it, but they have to admit it has elements of aesthetics that, you know, that you can't get around. You know what I'm saying? Because that'll be based, therefore, on, you know, your Stapanaveda principles. They don't know it, but principles that define what is architectural aesthetics. You know, so they somehow know they came close to that. Either by tradition that was just handed down, you know, they somebody picked it up when they were visiting India or something, and, you know, got it on the internet or something, you know, and so then they built the Colosseum and this, that, and something. Right? Okay, so we understand this principle is that something can stand on its own just from the desire for it. Right? Does that make sense? So, the knowledge and detachment, therefore, in the beginning stages, you know, are useful. But that means to get a foothold. So that basically a foothold specific, I mean, in general would mean up to the point of Brahma-Bhuta. Right? But more specific, you could say up to nishta, right? Because before that, without knowledge and without detachment, you're not going to get beyond the anarthas, right? So after that, it's not that without the knowledge and detachment that the devotional element doesn't go on, but it'll be useful, you know, to that. Does that make sense? But once taste starts, then there's no interest in anything material. So it's just the taste itself is the inspiration. Right, then the attachment. Right? So that would mean, if we look at it practically, then the desire to advance in devotional service or come to the platform of prema is essential no matter what stage you're at. Because that makes it devotional service. Then whether knowledge and jnana are added or not, that depends upon the level. You understand? The common element is you have the desire to advance, you advance. You don't have the desire, you don't. You understand? So what's the difference between the person who's always coming to temple, always trying to do, looking for opportunities like that, or the person who's not worried about it, and if the opportunity comes out and it fits into their schedule, and, you know, they don't have to take the kid to the dentist, and, you know, like that, and the dog's not sick, then they'll go. What's the difference?
He's always looking to advance.
Yeah, so it's the desire that's the difference. We'll take it. No, but he's engaged more and he's not. That's not actually the point. That's the symptom. But it's the symptom of desire. You understand? Yes. A little louder. Is that desire called laulium? Yes, you could say that's your laulium. Yes. Yeah, that would work. But it's just, you want it. Why do you buy anything? You want it. You walk by and you see it in the window. It looks interesting, but you don't want it. What do you do? keep walking. Well, you look at it, it looks interesting, and then you think about it, and you want it, you go in the store and buy it, right? Or you may walk by and get a few, wait a minute, go back, you know. But the point is when it comes to the point of you want it, that's when you endeavor. So that's the point, is if you want devotional service, then you'll make the devotional effort. The Abhideya will happen. Otherwise, then, if one's just left functioning on karma and jnan, then it's pious. You'll be keeping yourself pure, and you'll be in a very righteous state to take up the process, but you're not actually in the fire of it unless you desire it. Right? So that's how someone could be around a while, very knowledgeable, very advanced, very detached, but it doesn't look very dynamic. Because they're somehow or another distracted by their attachment. They're so into their chaturmasabrata, or they're so much into their, you know, studying this many, this and that. And, you know what I'm saying? So it distracts them from the actual point. Is you're studying so you know who you are, who Krishna is, so you can serve him better. Or you detach so that you don't get distracted by material. Does that make sense? Let us say, okay, one of the chaturmasabratas. I'm only saying because Kartik's coming up and the Pandu and Panchak is coming up. Okay, one of the chaturmasabratas is only accept that food which comes easily, without any endeavor. Okay? So now, for a brahmachari, going and sitting down and eating the regular prasad, is that any endeavor?
No.
How much time does it take?
Sit
and eat and get up and walk away. Yeah, 20 minutes, 10 minutes. Bhavananda, 3 minutes. Like that. Remember what? Because he eats so fast and goes. But his full concentration gets all the taste, everything. It's like it's just like that. And Bhagawan used to complain, you know, like that. So then he sat sitting there a little while longer. And then he got up and left. He says, "You're doing it again. You're leaving." I say, "I stayed 5 minutes instead of 3. What are you complaining about?" You know? like that. So it's. So, what were we talking about? Yes, and so it's that. So like that, 10 to 20 minutes, you've sat, eaten, gotten up, washed, and then doing whatever you're going to do, right? And even if you eat 2 times a day, you know, then that's 20 to 40 minutes. Or 3 times a day, right? Then it's 30 minutes to an hour, right? Now, how long does it take if this brahmachari, because this food is not appropriate for his chaturmasabrata, and then he makes his own arrangements, cooks himself, how many hours?
3 hours.
Yeah. So 3 hours. But the other one is 1 hour. So which one is actually following the vrata? Because the point is what's minimal on the material platform. It's not that you ate something with no ghee, no salt, no sugar, no taste, no nothing. That's not the actual point of it. The point of it is that what comes without any endeavor. Right? Because in a normal house, even you're cooking, you know, the rice doesn't have anything in it. The dal, before the chaunce, it's just plain. You can eat that. You know what I'm saying? So there's some, but the point is that you can get distracted by these things. And it looks like you're really devotionally involved. Right? Like one devotee in L.A., following very strictly all the rules, this and that. Somebody came up to him, you know, after the morning program, and they had Mahaprasad, you know, on the plate, and they just distribute a little bit to everybody, you know, everyone gets a teaspoon, like that. And then they came up to him to offer. No, he won't take, because it breaks all his different rules, and no ghee, no this, no that. And Prabhupada just said, well, you guys missed the point, you know. He's a fool. Because this is Mahaprasad, it's beyond his rules. So it's not Mahaprasad anymore. It's food with ghee in it and salt and sugar and it's cooked or, you know, something, you know what I'm saying? So it breaks, you know, 6 of my rules. You know, it's like, so that's the point, is we're following devotional service, but we get distracted by the knowledge or renunciation. Right? But the point is you just make it easy. So you want to do something. Instead of eating 3 times a day, eat 2. Or instead of 2, eat 1. But just go sit down, eat, and go away. You know? And even if you eat a little more because you ate once, okay. So instead of sitting for 10 minutes, you sat for 15. You know? What's the big deal? But you also cut out you know, two other times of eating. Right? Does that make sense? So you saved 15 minutes. Does that make sense? So like that is one has to see is that the devotional service itself is the desire for it. So if you see that's there, you'll see your devotional service is dynamic. But the problem is one becomes distracted from the desire for devotional service because of the desire for the material. So that's why knowledge and detachment are useful, in that the distraction from the desire for devotional service is reduced. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why it's not because you did something, that's why devotional service comes. It's not because, oh, I went out and I did the best in the marathon, or distributed more books, or, you know, I was behind, we built the temple, or... No, that's none of that. It's that your desire to please Krishna. And so therefore you could do it through this big service. You know, so then there's a lot of that. You know, and so many people will be benefited. Right? So now so many people can come and take part in the Krishna conscious activities because now there's a big temple. Right? So these are the benefits. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
This principle which you pointed out, that the real drive is desire.
Real drive is desire, yes.
So Prabhupada, from the first page, he's saying, oh, you should ask Krishna for pure devotional service.
Yes.
But that's the principle he's pointing out.
Yes, yes. That's all we want is pure devotional service. Because we see here, is that what he say? Shukshastakam is, just let me be your servant, and my only remuneration I want is pure unalloyed devotion. That's all. Because devotion is given by Krishna. Right? He's Bhakti Pada. Right? It means you're getting bhakti, but he's the Lord of bhakti. So if he gives it, then you have it. Right? So it's a matter of pleasing him. And it says that the association of devotees, because it's the devotees who have the bhakti, and they therefore request Krishna, and then Krishna gives. Because they're the personification, but still, Krishna has to offer. Is that okay? So just sincerity, the desire to perform the devotional service to please Krishna with nothing else. That's it. That's all that's required. So everything else allows one to get a foothold, right? So a foothold, you could say, is nishta. But we also see foothold can mean bhava, because then you actually have a foothold. You have a spiritual body, you're in the spiritual world, you know, so that's a solid foothold. But as we see from what's defined, that still hasn't made it yet. Then there's the advanced stages of the bhava, now that starts to attract Krishna. Right? And then it comes to prema, and then there's in prema then beyond that separation and other elements. Does that make sense? But so it's a foothold. But so we won't get too distracted, you know, too feeling bad, then, you know, nishtha is also a solid foothold. But still, we use karma and jnana. Does that make sense? Because karma and jnana will come automatically with devotional service, so it doesn't technically have to be separately. You know what I'm saying? Here, we're not doing this for knowledge. Here, we're trying to hear about Krishna. Because the knowledge is about Krishna. So it's Harikatha. That's why we're doing it. And as a course, then we'll make sure we regularly do it. Otherwise, it's just reading. There's always a reason why we don't read. Oh, this came up, that came up, a little tired. Oh, I'll read after I'm tired. Then when you get it, oh, then there's something else. Oh, you forgot to change it around. So it never happens. So you have a regulated course. Then, like everything else in the sadhana, then one does it. Does that make sense? So that's the point of it. It's not... To become academically astute or something like that. So the degree itself is not what is being sought after. But it's that level of understanding that comes with that body of knowledge. That ability to be able to appreciate Krishna from that perspective. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah, it's called, because it's one of the five main process as hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, not as knowledge, but as Harikatha. Like that. Because those who are just into knowledge, then they'll go nuts because they won't get into the devotional aspect. They'll get into something about, well, here it says that this planet is this far away and this, but then over here it says like this, so it's contradictory. That's what they get into. Like that. They don't get into the mood of, you know, the devotees. You know, Prithu Maharaj's mood at the yajna. You know what I'm saying? That Tvasta was so absorbed in producing an enemy of Indra that he didn't chant the mantra right. And therefore ended up with somebody who Indra's his enemy. Then the scholar isn't looking at that. They're looking at, well, the word here in Sanskrit, in the Bhagavatam, then it doesn't have a long or a short like Prabhupada talks about in the purport. So what is Prabhupada talking about? So there's a misprinting here, or, you know, Prabhupada's not giving the right information. But the point is that it's nothing to do with that. It's to do with the Vedic grammar. Because he's using Vedic verses, right? It means you're going to produce a demon like that. You're not going to use, it's not, you're not using out of some Purana. You're using out of the Atharva Veda. Right? And so from the Atharva Veda, that has to be chanted according to the notes. And Atharva Veda, like Rig, has this one line that's used occasionally in the grammar that the syllable's short, but it's chanted in the higher position and long. So he didn't do that. So the problem was is he applied it like the classical instead of like the Vedic. He missed it. Right? Because Yajurveda doesn't use that, Samaveda doesn't use it, but Rig and Atharva does. You know what I'm saying? So this is the stuff that those who are studying for intellectual reasons, they get distracted by these things. And despite all their knowledge, they still make mistakes because it's not based on the transcendental. Everybody else would just read it and accept, okay, a mistake was made. And if I can't figure it out from the verse here, it doesn't matter. The mistake was made. Sukadeva Goswami, you know, can't be wrong. Sutta Goswami's quoting it, otherwise he would have corrected it. He doesn't. Vyasadeva wrote it down and he's the one that knows all these things. He's a literary incarnation. He had no problem with it. Prabhupada comments on it. Other acharyas comment on it. So does that mean nobody here knows any grammar? You know, and the guy from, you know, where he's from in America, you know, and now he's learned a little grammar, you know, and then he knows? You understand? So this is the point. We can get distracted by knowledge. You know, or the yo, yo, yum, yum. You know, and then because of that, and then Prabhupada will translate it as, you know, the yo, yo, he'll put it into one word. You know, but they'll say, no, it's said twice, so it should be said twice. This is the distractions. Wow. The first example in Chaturmasa and the last example I just gave, it was the same person. I just realized now it was the same person. Yeah.
We get what we want.
Yes, in principle you get what you want. Whether it's actually in detail what you want, that's another thing. But spiritually is you get what you want. Materially you get what you deserve. You know, it's not even what you need, it's what you deserve, you know, so, you know.
In the different level of spiritual life, sometimes it's difficult to know what you want.
But the point is pure love of God is always the common principle, so you never have to worry. You know, it's like the 26 qualities of a devotee, is that mood of servant of Krishna, that's always there. The other 25, depending upon the situation, the interaction may be manifest or not. So one can always, no matter what stage, want to come to the platform of pure unalloyed devotion. So that's important. That's why focusing on, oh, I'm disgusting, I'm fallen, I'm useless, I'm all this and that, isn't so important. Yes, the point is it something that you emotionally are attached to, or is it just a fact? If it's a fact, deal with it. You know what I'm saying? You walk into the kitchen, you want to cook a whole big thing, and there's just a bunch of potatoes. So you could sit down on the floor, oh, there's only potatoes. Oh, I'm so useless, there's only potatoes. What I like this. Or you could just get up and, you know, cook 10 different preparations with potatoes. Does that make sense? So that's the point. It's that what you're going to do with it. So if you desire serving Krishna, then that's always available. That's the one thing that's always available. Now you have a specific thing, you know, I want to be the temple president of the biggest temple in the biggest country in the biggest yatra in the world. Then, you know, you may have problems because the biggest yatra isn't in the biggest country or isn't in the biggest temple, you know, like this. So it may take a while to work it all out. Does that make sense?
I remember in this sense, in Dayananda Maharaj was giving an example. Let's say you're looking for something in the material world, like you lost something. You're screaming for it. Water, where are you? But Krishna, if you... The person so nice, is really Krishna, he said, here I am!
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
He's calling
true.
You.
True, yeah. Because it's non-different. Yeah, that's a good point. Very clever. Okay, then the last verse. It is the opinion of expert devotees that mental speculation and the artificial austerities of yoga practice may be favorable for becoming liberated from material contamination, right? Expert devotees, so he's approving of this. Right? Mental speculation, artificial austerities, like that. Because real austerity is just performing of your duty. Right, where you add, because your duty will create enough problem as it is. You don't have to look elsewhere. You know what I'm saying? Even you want to, you just every day eat, you know, with the brahmacharis. You know, there is going to be a day when it's a problem, right? You know, somebody wasn't there, they didn't cook properly, they forgot to cook, you know, like that.
This day has come.
This day has come.
We cannot go in there anymore.
Really? Why?
Yes. Management made the rule that it's only the brahmacharis that can go there.
I think if we pay for 1 month, all meals for 1 month in one go at the general manager, then
you can. Okay.
But
still, it's only brahmacharis who can go
there. No. But you have to just go and explain that you're grihastha brahmacharis. Yes, only brahmacharis.
I actually managed to get in one day.
One day.
One day. And I tried 2 days. I managed to get in one.
And then they threw you out. Maybe try shoe polish. Amos and Andy? Oh, well, someone else can explain it to you. Okay. Okay. It is the opinion of expert devotees that mental speculation and the artificial austerities of yoga practice may be favorable for becoming liberated from material contamination. But they will also make one's heart harder and harder. Right? They will not help at all in the progress of devotional service. Right? You become liberated. So that's the only benefit, is that element of liberation. So one has to cultivate the devotional desire. That has to be what is mainly cultivated. They will not help at all in the progress of devotional service. These processes are therefore not favorable for entering into the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Actually, Krishna consciousness, devotional service itself, is the only way of advancing in devotional life. Devotional service is absolute. It is both the cause and the effect. So, one, you know, could be confused that now here is, one, two. Okay, yeah, so first part, second chapter, this is in Samanya Bhakti. He's explaining devotional service. Right? We see in the first chapter he's opened up, basically said that the symptoms of one who's situated in devotional service, and gives the nine symptoms of someone on the platform of Bhava Bhakti. Right? Because that's then, you know, your standard. So here he's saying these others won't work. So it may bring one to liberation. So it has to be that that element of liberation, you're engaging that in the devotional process. But on its own, it's not going to make it any better. That's why even our studying, our austerities have to be seen in connection to Krishna. Otherwise, they will create an environment of less attachment to the material world, so seemingly more favorable for devotional service, but because the heart is harder, it will also make it harder to take up devotional, take devotional service to heart.
Yeah.
Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
So we can study knowledge to give us attachment.
Yes.
But without getting knowledge which will develop attachment, without actually hearing about the devotional things.
Yes. Yes. But you want to be careful that there you're not separating what we read, like Bhagavatam. They say, okay, well, you're studying that or Gita's for developing the knowledge, but to develop that attraction to Krishna, then we have to read about his pastimes and all these things like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
No, the whole process is just hearing about Krishna. Right? That's the point, is that, and along with that, naturally, if you're doing it in devotional service, naturally knowledge and detachment come. But they're part of the devotional process. It can't be separately endeavored for. That's what we're saying, is that due to one's conditioning, let's say one is academic by nature, so one, you know, takes very easily to study, you know, while someone else doesn't. But one has to see that studying is for the purpose of knowing Krishna and pleasing Krishna. Otherwise, if it's just for knowledge, it has a limit. It will purify. But the difficulty is that one may get distracted because the heart gets harder. You understand? So here's these points. It's pointing out, it's not that it's not used, but it's pointing out that still, all these rules of devotional service, still it's the desire to please Krishna that is the driving force. I'm his servant, therefore I want to serve and please. Because these others, these are recommended, we're following, but they're practices of someone who has that attitude, what they want to do. Right? Does that make sense? Someone who wants to please Krishna, therefore follows in the footsteps of those who are pleasing Krishna. And they say these are the activities, so you do them. But it's being done because it pleases Krishna, not because it's so austere. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's like I remember they do it as somehow or another the devotees are very sincere and they want to do everything nicely for Krishna and everything like that, but they would also at the same time get easily distracted by, you know, the trappings. But it was a positive thing because they weren't getting distracted by the mundane element. It was only the spiritual practices they get, you know, like that. So remember the sannyasis, they would come through to the temple with their brahmacharis and had a big party like that. And those days, at least, yeah. Yeah, they come into the temple, they're greeted, generally wash their feet and this and that. It's maybe a kirtan, or depending what time of day, they go, they're given a room, some prasad, all these things. So these sannyasis come, they sat down, wash their feet, they bring them the mahaprasad plate, big, full plate, you know? And, you know, just reach, take a tulsi, and say, you know, take it away, you know? Like that. And the brahmacharis are, wow, what renunciation. You know, he's like, you know, the brahmacharis, as soon as you move the plate, you know, they all just jump on it, right? You know, and they're just, wow. It's like, you know, so they're so impressed, you know? But it wasn't, it was like, when we say devotional service and liberation, they're synonymous. So in those days, it was, you know, devotional service and the detachment was part of that. But the point is, we're so impressed by the detachment as opposed to, you know, they're so absorbed in Krishna and therefore, they're not, you know, eating, whatever it is. Because the point is, it's mahaprasad. You take a little bit. You honor prasad. But here was from the point of detachment. So everyone is so impressed. But you understand what I'm saying? It's a fine point. But it's in that you could easily miss the devotional service, because they bring a plate of prasad to Prabhupada, he wouldn't sit down. He'd take a little something. you know, distribute it. You know? Does that make sense? Either tell them to distribute or distribute himself. But here was just, you know, the element of the renunciation, you know, because it was like, they were so impressed, the brahmacharis.
Prabhupada is so soft. It's so,
yeah. That's the point. The heart's not hard. That's the difficulty, is that the austerities, if you see it as austerity, it can make the hard heart. Hard heart.
Right?
Or horn and hard art. Yeah. So, we'll just move on. The explanation would take longer than its value. Yes, the cost. Yeah. Right. So, one has to see is that one's austerity is to please Krishna. Then the heart's not hard. Like we see the Goswamis, they're not hard-hearted. But a Muni is. Right? But they're very knowledgeable, very detached, very powerful. But one of the qualities of a Muni is he gets angry easy. Right? Why? Because his senses are so controlled. There's this underlying frustration. But he's able to control that, so it just, you'll see anger. He won't get frustrated and get involved in sense grabbing, but you'll see that anger. Does that make sense? Yes?
No.
Scratching. Good thing's not like that. Final exam that's being conducted, you know, orally, you know, so they accidentally recite, yes, okay, you know, oops. Yes, must become soft, because compassion, why is the reason of Krishna interacting with the living entities anyways is compassion. He's created the material world so we can come back to him through compassion.
What was the comment?
Make the heart softer.
Oh, the heart should become softer, yes. As you advance, the heart should become softer. Because otherwise, when you advance in knowledge and detachment, the heart becomes harder. Which is technically what is all right for the mundane platform to become liberated, because it's becoming harder towards material, you know, endeavor and sense gratification and everything. So that's fine. And it gets you the liberation. But the problem is the heart needs to be soft to appreciate Krishna consciousness. Right? Not materially soft, right? Devotionally soft. So one has to be able to strike a proper balance there. You know, that's... Okay. Yes.
Is the soft heart defined?
Is the soft heart defined? We said compassion. Hard, you don't care. You know, which can be an advantage. You don't get involved. You don't become attached. But it has its limits on being able to share and expand Krishna consciousness. You know, because it's like, you know, the hard-hearted person may be right, but no one wants to associate with them or gain their perspective. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it means Shylock was right. The guy owes him a pound of flesh. It's a fact. It's legal. It's documented. It's signed. But because the heart is so hard, right, that he would apply it in this situation, then nobody in the assembly appreciated. Right? Does that make sense? Not even his own people. Does that make sense? Like that. Yes?
Or is it in certain association, like strong association in a certain place, in a spiritual place, then one's level of attachment is such? But how in another association,
it's just a matter of, that's why a good association is always recommended, because if the association is good, then one naturally takes on a more advanced perspective and desire, determination. One was in less good association, less. But the main thing that changes is one's desire, right? So, in one sense, one is more studying and being more austere because you want to please Krishna, right? So if you're in good association, you would do those more, and so therefore, and if you're in other association, that's not so dynamic, so the attachments and other things would come up more. So that's why seeking good association is the main principle of devotional service, because this desire to always be sincere in wanting service, that comes from association. So that's another way. When we read, now what's happening now? We're reading this Tattva Sutra. So technically, in association, what's happening? Yeah, no, rich and basic, but okay, maybe it's too abstract. Who are we associating with when we're studying this? Yes, and here's quoting Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which means you're associating with? Yeah, and then sometimes he's quoting the Bhagavatam, then you're associating with Sutta, Sukadev. Right? You understand? So, technically, studying the scriptures, the whole thing is association. It's sadhu sangha. Right? So there's the sadhu sangha as the book Bhagavat, and the sadhu sangha as the person Bhagavat. Right? Does that make sense? So like that, then that's the idea, is that one associates with the devotees because the devotees talk about Krishna. Does that make sense? So for us, this is not pursuance of knowledge. Right? We just give these kind of degrees so that there'll be a kind of consideration. You know, just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would see that his second initiated devotees had Brahmin threats. Because traditionally, if your family got Upanayanam, you wore a Brahmin threat. If you didn't. You still had the Pancharatrik mantras. You know, you could still worship the deity, but you didn't have the threat. But because of that, then some people consider that the only Brahmin is the one who's gone to Upanayanam, that Vaishnava is not actually Brahmin. Then he would give the Brahmin thread so that they would consider that they're Brahmins. So minimum they would see him that way. Does that make sense? So the idea is that when we're studying these branches of knowledge, then so that others would appreciate, you know, then there's a bachelor of divinity or a master of divinity, you know, some degree, because then they will appreciate a particular level of academic commitment, right? They'll appreciate that aspect of it. But what is being presented, you know what I'm saying? In other words, what is in our first year of our tertiary course of study, you know, you'd be hard to be able to find that in even higher doctorate level discussions in the Western Academy. You know? So, therefore, technically, there's no comparison. But it's a matter of you spent this much time and this and that and so many things like that. You know? Does that make sense? Because even that, it does have meaning. Like the first year gets a diploma of divinity. So America, Australia, England, that works fine. But in Europe, a diploma is a 3-year degree. Right? So then they had, that the Europeans had problem that we called our first year a diploma. They said use certificate, use something else. But, you know, since, does that make sense? You know, so you have that, they see the wording and all that, you know, so then it becomes a problem. But what to do? Yes.
If one has a tendency to be soft-hearted materially, should one practice more austerity?
To get hard-hearted. So go from material soft heart to material hard heart to spiritual soft heart. I wouldn't think you would have to separately endeavor for austerity, because the material world automatically creates austerity. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, yeah. you know, it's just like how you say. It's only because of the soft heart one would take care of a screaming kid, right? But by doing that enough, the heart starts to get less sentimental. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Is that okay? It just happens, Arna. You don't have to worry. You just have to walk in the front door of your house and austerity is staring you in the face. Okay, is this okay? We understand? So the point is that devotional service has no other limbs. It is defined by itself. It's its own method. It's its own goal. So having that desire to please Krishna, to be in a relationship with Krishna, meaning as servant and master, you know, not as, well, I want to be this and that, you know, like not that, then that itself is what drives it and that's what gives the result. So in one's own personal development, one should focus on that aspect. Do I have the desire? You know, cultivate that more than other aspects. It doesn't mean others aren't useful. Because when one's not, why? Because of ignorance. So how do you correct that? Knowledge. You know? And what gets in the way of that? You're too attached, right? Because of the mind. So how to do that? Renunciation. Does that make sense? But in the proper performance of our own devotional duties, it's automatic. Right? It means we perform our duties, it's already austere. Right? We study the scriptures because it's part of our sadhana. It's so the knowledge is already there. But the main thing is association. Okay? Yeah. So, after thus describing the most exalted kind of devotional service, the author of the sutras now begins his description of upaya bhakti. Right? Because it's just like before, when you're doing the dasa mool and you're discussing the soul. Right? So, the first point is the nature of the soul, right? Then the liberated and conditioned, right? So here then, the perfected ultimate stage of bhakti is described first. You know what we're talking about. Then upaya bhakti, how you're going to get there, right? Sutra 34. Upaya bhakte puranushilanam pratyaharas Changam. Upaya bhakti has its parts, right? So the pure unalloyed doesn't. That's why it's unalloyed. There's nothing else in it. There's no mix. But upaya bhakti has intent devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and two, renunciation of the material world, right? So always remembering, never forgetting. And footnote. In Sri Upanishad, the intent devotion to the Lord is known as mantras 15 to 18. And the renunciation of the material world is explained in mantras 1 to 3. Right? So, that makes sense. So, yeah. So, seeing that everything's in relationship to the Lord, it's His world, we're His servant, part and part like that. And then the other is that, you know, we want to please Him. So therefore, we want to develop our love for Him, but He's covered by His effulgence. Please remove that effulgence, all these different elements. Right? So they go together. It says it has two parts, so they both have to be done at once. Because you can't, the glass, if it's got ink in it, how do you put milk? Right? Even if you pour some milk, it's still mixed with the ink. So easy, pick it out, throw the ink, then pour in the milk. Right? In other words, you can pour tons of milk, and then eventually it should purify itself, but instead of spending, you know, how you say, tens of liters of milk, you could have just, you know, thrown the poison out, give it a rinse, and curry ball. Summary of Shri. Yes.
In the last sutra, there's no quotation from Isha Upanishad. Is that because Isha Upanishad is dealing with this upaya bhakti rather than the
follow-up? No, because he said both. He gives both. The 15 to 18 could be. could be, but it will be inferring the higher principle. It means the Shastra always does that. It's just that its focus may be on something else. Because like Ayurveda, their actual point is that you're sick because you're in the material world, because you're not in the spiritual world. So to create a balance, and so sickness is out of balance. So you're chronically sick by being in the material world, right? So you have to correct that mentality, work on it. But we can deal with the acute elements of sickness, you know.
Really, your satchitananda is out of
balance. Yeah, your satchitananda is out of balance here. So you got to get that into balance, right? You know, you think you're Mr. Ananda, but you're not. You know, so you're suffering. The other guy thinks he's Mr. Sat, and he's not, right? So that's the problem, yeah. And so the principle of balancing one's nature, right? Because there it's satchitananda, here it's mucus bile and air, right? So create that. But the point is that you're trying to get that balance of being God conscious. But that'll be very minimally discussed. The emphasis will be on those things that can make it favorable for devotional service, but they can get distracted by it. One can get distracted. Like that. Okay. Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. This upaya bhakti alone is the resort of the conditioned souls, right? Because the phala bhakti means you're getting the results, right? But it's not that in upaya bhakti you're not getting results. You're getting devotional service, but it's not the highest platform, because the goal has to be the end, right? Like that. So upaya bhakti is what the conditioned soul. So if you're conditioned, then upaya bhakti is for you. Right? If you're not conditioned, then we thank you for sitting here very peacefully and tolerating all the things that we're saying like that and setting a great example.
Okay. Should I get up and leave now?
Meaning?
No.
No, but what about the example? Like that. It's just like Arjuna, if you leave, then they'll consider it that it wasn't because of your highly elevated position, but it was because of, I knew he couldn't make it through, you know, so many years and all that, or, you know, just see, you know, now he's put on saffron, now he's listening. You know, all these things will come up. So therefore, it's better if you stay, and then people will be more appreciative. Okay, the cultivation of divine love is the activity of the blissful inclination of the transcendental jiva. Right? So divine love. So we're trying to get to that stage. But the thing is it's so brilliant that even a small ray of it is enough to, you know, how you say, lighten up the whole material world. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, something is there. When we say, so we again, like we discussed yesterday, can't take it that, well, then it means there's none of this other. No, it goes throughout, but it's the prominence is the conditioning. Therefore, the upaya bhakti will take care of that, because you're cultivating those things that will make you remember Krishna. You're cultivating those things that will make sure you don't forget Him. Right? But in the spiritual world, there's no question of forgetting. That's the meaning of samadhi. Samadhi means you never forget. So they don't have to cultivate never forgetting. It's only always remember. So you don't even have to cultivate always remember. They spontaneously do it. So that's the difference. So we see in the devotional process, even this, you know, in moving from the upaya to the phala bhakti, that the element of never forgetting may be very prominent in our lives. And a sadhana, of course, always remembering Krishna is the prominent element. But we discuss how to not forget. But when we apply it in our life, much of our day is spent trying to not forget Krishna. Right? But as time goes, that becomes less and less, where one's not forgetting, but one may not be, you know, so much remembering. Right? But when the taste comes, then one starts to remember. Though there's also elements to make sure one doesn't get distracted, because when we say never forget, we mean never. Right? But when one comes to that neutral, you know, so neutral state, then, I mean, so then we see with Ruchi and Asakti, the early stages of Bhava, then you're not dealing so much with the never forget, it's the always remember. Right? But there's a cultivation. Right? But when it comes to this point, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur is pointing out, then seeing Krishna, there's no meaning of cultivation. Right? So there's no upaya there. There's no process of obtaining a goal. It just spontaneously happens. Right? Does that make sense? So it's beyond that. So the fall of bhakti doesn't include these elements of trying to remember the Lord and renunciation of the world. You know, but always remember means you are always remembered, but it's not a rule that you have to remember. You are remembering. You know what I'm saying? So that way that's the connection between the two. One is you're always remembering as a sadhana, and the other is you're always remembering because it's natural. That's why he says it's the natural, or the blissful inclination of the transcendental jiva. So the cultivation there of divine is expressing it. It's not cultivating as a point to gain a result of bhakti. Bhakti is already there. Now it's a matter of cultivating what's already there. Do you know what I'm saying? So, the renunciation of the material world is the reformative upliftment of the jivas from the dirt of worldliness. Right? So, yeah. Right? So, the cultivation is the nature of the jiva. And renunciation is reformation, to bring one out of that distraction. So then this cultivation will be, you know, small in the beginning and overwhelming at the end. Right? So that's all that's left. So the renunciation has its point. It goes up to a point and then it's left. Right? Does that make sense? The renunciation is the very means of liberation. Without giving due attention to renunciation, there will be hardly any possibility of progress because of the material attachments of the jiva, right? So it must be there. Advancement in devotional service is often signified by symptoms such as tears, tremoring, sweating, etc. But these signs on their own are not proof for genuine devotional emotions. They can be caused by material attachments as well. Therefore, unless the devotional cultivation is observed along with renunciation, these shadowy reflections will occupy the heart and genuine divine love will not be manifested there. Right? So, remember is that these points are being made based on the previous one. Right? So, having said that devotional service doesn't require, then he's pointing out that up to the point of liberation, they're very important. So he says, without giving due attention, but it's due attention, not undue attention. Right? It's due because it's useful in devotional service. It's undue when you think it is the cause of devotional service. Right? In other words, knowledge and renunciation are very useful as long as you see it in connection with devotional service. If you think that it's the cause of devotional service, then you miss the point, because devotional service has no cause. Right? Inherent devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's actually what causes the inherent devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead to manifest. You understand? So the inherent devotion is what causes the inherent devotion. Yes?
So, when it says here on this devotional cultivation is observed, does that mean the development of the sentiments and the emotional content?
It just says will not be manifest. Isn't that? Or are you reading from somewhere else?
No, it's exactly the same page.
Okay.
Wondering what is meant by that.
Well, but it won't be manifest because the one is there, how will the other be there? Same like we said, there's the ink and there's the milk. If one's there, how will the other be there? You know what I'm saying? If the glass is full of milk, there's no place to pour ink. You know?
Unless you pour milk there, it cannot be full of milk.
Yes, so you have to pour the milk. So, in other words, the inherent devotion to the Lord, that goes on from Upaya Bhakti, and that is the state of the Phala Bhakti. But the difference is in Upaya Bhakti, there's renunciation of the material world, which you don't have in Phala Bhakti. They equate it, but you have to be careful because it's not automatic. You know what I'm saying? It's not automatic. So that will be a problem, is that it's only useful, in other words, that the renunciation makes room for devotion. But it's not that it is the cause of devotion. So unless, like Prabhu is saying here, is that unless you're cultivating the positive elements of devotion to Krishna, then all the renunciation in the world still won't cause devotion. Right? If that's clear, then according to one's nature, one can be easily as renounced as possible. Right? It's because one sees the less one's absorbed and distracted by the material energy, then the easier it'll be to cultivate Krishna consciousness. Right? And if one is distracted by so many things in the material energy, it means you have a lot of things to try to engage. But it's also can possibly be a lot of distraction. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then, it's very useful like that. It means it's the very means of liberation. But remember, liberation is only the neutral point of spirituality. It's not the positive point of spirituality, that's devotion. Does that make sense? Is that okay?
I don't know how to phrase the question because it's related to the previous point of the heart being hard.
The heart being hard.
People who are engaged in the process and they're very fixed, you know, in the process and they're very attached to the whole thing about being detached and they're preaching that thing of being detached. Even to people who are not on the same level but actually have the necessity to engage their nature in the devotion.
Yeah, well, it's just that they're discussing what works for them because that's what they contemplate, so naturally that's what they'll discuss.
Yeah.
So it's not unnatural that they would discuss like that. But the point is detachment means from both karma and jnana. Right? So our identity is not, you know, pundits or renunciates. Our identity is devotees. But because devotees were absorbed in Krishna consciousness, therefore we're not much interested in the material world. So unless your situation is nice within the material world, you don't work with, you're not worried about that. If it is, engage it. It's no big deal. But if it's not, why make the endeavor? Does that make sense? Yes. And also we see is that he's defined before that there's these two, devotional service has these two parts. Right? So his devotional service in its pure state has the two parts. Then the pure state, the pure unalloyed state, and then that which will attain that. So this is then there. So you get a complete picture. So that's why one always has to balance between the two, because one can say, oh, see here, we don't have to follow anything. But then, no, here, without giving due attention, he says, there won't be hardly any possibility of progress. See, no, you have to. No, the point is they two have to be balanced. Is that it's the intent on the devotion to Krishna that's the more important of the two. In other words, points one and two, one is the main, two is the supportive. Like that.
The twilight is the problem, as you mentioned.
The twilight's always where the two overlap. That's always the problem. Anything you're discussing, it's always the problem. Karma's fine. Jnana is fine. But then there's the fifth chapter, right? Karma and jnana combined. That's where it starts to get fuzzy. Right? And then, you know, in the 7 through 12, just devotional service, very clear there. We went through that very quickly, right? Most devotees have no problem. That's what they're always hearing. Like that. But then when you get into the last chapters, that again is describing dealing with the twilight. So then it starts to become fuzzy again. So that's the point, is this place between where it's spiritual but not devotional. Right? And so there's a difference between matter and spirit. And then in spirit, between what is transcendental, you know, only, and transcendental and devotional. Like that. So that way you end up with these, you know, two, because matter and spirit, but then liberation would be considered spiritual by most contexts, right? And so therefore, it and devotional service are synonymous, but they are only by the Vaishnava definition. Because in the true Vaishnava definition, liberation that's not devotional is actually not even spiritual. They're transcendentalists, but they're not actually situated spiritually. Right? So, yeah. Okay, so then we'll continue with this tomorrow. Oh, excuse me, Monday, yeah. So you're getting worried that you've been missing classes all these weekends and all that. Yeah, so then we'll see you all tomorrow. Hey, wait a minute, what are Mondays? Only the elite know about the weekends.
Some mailing list that long.
Yes. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivedanta ki, Jayanitai Gaura Premanandi.